Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutun.
Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Prime Minister Ismail Sabri met with the Yang di-Pertuan Agong today to present his proposed cabinet. However, there was no announcement of the lineup as expected. It will only be revealed tomorrow at 11 a.m. Now, in the days leading up to this, there's been a lot of speculation as to how Ismail Sabri will shape his government. In meeting Pakatan Harapan leaders yesterday, he seemed to signal a shift in the tone and approach of his leadership. So how significant is this move? And might it have an impact on the cabinet lineup? Let's ask former Deputy Minister of International Trade and Industry, the DAP Member of Parliament for Bangi, Ong Kian Ming. He joins us on the line now. Kian Ming, thank you for being on the show tonight. Now, you know, yesterday, Ismail Sabri and the three Pakatan Harapan leaders issued a joint statement saying that they were going to put country and people first. And when they said that, it seemed like there were echoes of your own previous call in Parliament for a political moratorium. And I'm wondering whether you think that this is similar and if that meeting will be significant in paving the way for bipartisan cooperation.
I think it is significant, the fact that the three leaders of Pakatan Harapan met with the new Prime Minister. I think it's quite clear from the follow-up statements by some of my leaders that the baseline put forward by the previous Prime Minister, Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin, in terms of the reform packages is going to be the baseline for negotiation. So we do hope that all sides can negotiate in good faith, and regardless of what the cabinet composition is when it's announced tomorrow, those reform initiatives, plus perhaps others that will be negotiated, can be put on the table as part and parcel of this bipartisan effort, not just to fight COVID, but also to last to give a lasting and significant impact in terms of institutional reform to the country.
Kian Ming, is it realistic, though, to expect that a change in personnel at cabinet level, especially those that you had conversations with in the lead up to that Friday olive branch by Muhyiddin Yassin, you know, that if they were not there, that somehow it would not make a difference to, you know, having the reform agenda pushed ahead? Do you think that Ismail Sabri's cabinet will be all on board with his ideas, or will there be, in fact, a need for specific champions for this particular approach to governing?
Of course, there would be people who would be more open to these ideas than others in the cabinet and also in the current government. But I think all of them, hopefully, would be on the same page on one thing, which is they would not want the government to collapse in a short period of time to trigger a general election when we still haven't managed to get this COVID thing under control. To have the opposition parties coming to the Prime Minister to say that, look, we want to have these reform initiatives on the table, and I think we would also seriously consider abstaining from a confidence vote to ensure that this Prime Minister can continue to be the Prime Minister until the next general election. I think this is something that all sides want, including those people in the upcoming cabinet and also in the current government.
Kian Ming, could you help me understand, is there a difference between Ismail Sabri's olive branch and the Muhyiddin Yassin olive branch, in your opinion?
I think we would be asking for some more reforms, the details of which are unspecified at this point in time. Not for public consumption, I should say. But I think one difference is that you know, we saw that Muhyiddin also admitted that he was having a minority government. And I think that also calls into question the whole legitimacy of the previous government. But of course, that's all water under the bridge. Now, I think Ismail Sabri has a majority, which he's demonstrated to the Yang Bertuan Agong. But at the same time, you know, he's also not wanting to end up in Tan Sri Muhyiddin's situation, whereby he ends up being a minority prime minister. So I think all sides wants to avoid that possibility happening, which is why I think, you know, we should all sit down and talk about what's good for the country moving forward.
Speaking of what's good for the country, towards the end of the Perikatan National Government, of course, we had that bipartisan approach to dealing with the Klang Valley vaccination issue, the surge operation, which you were involved along with Kari Jamaluddin. Would you like to see him return to cabinet, perhaps, you know, helming the health ministry?
To me, I think there are four key ministries where, you know, we need to have good, capable people. The Ministry of Finance, the Health Ministry, Ministry of Education, and then also MITI, my previous ministry. And I think Kairi would be able to play an effective role in either in any of the ministries that I name above. Of course, I think given the fact that we it's quite clear that the old previous health minister isn't going to retain his position, I think Kairi would be one of the best candidates among the MPs on the government side to helm that ministry. But he, I think his skills can be also utilized in any other of the key ministries that I named just now.
Well, okay, so let's take one of those ministries, MITI in particular, because you are also former MITI deputy minister. I'm wondering, you know, MITI has come under a lot of criticism for the way they the SOPs were managed during the previous administration. Can I ask you, Kemin, what you're hoping this incoming administration, regardless of who holds the MITI portfolio, what you're hoping they sort out and get right this time?
Yeah, I think firstly, the whoever is going to be the MITI minister, and I hope that it will be a new MITI minister, needs to restore some of the public confidence and faith in the ministry, which has been battered under the various MCOs and also under a minister that I think has failed to communicate MITI's key prerogatives and policies to the public. So that's first. Secondly, I think the new MITI minister has to have a much more aggressive communication strategy in terms of explaining various actions to the public. And then thirdly, to go out and convince foreign investors or placate them, those who are actually already in Malaysia and also those who are thinking of coming to Malaysia, that Malaysia is still open for business, that we still have good policies and good people and good, attractive incentives for people to continue to invest here and also for people to come and invest, put in new investments here as well. So it's a lot to do, but I think that, we need to have a fresh start in order to restore this kind of confidence to the ministry.
All right. Thank you so much, Kian Ming, for your time. That was Bangi MP Ong Kian Ming joining us on the show. We're going to take a quick break, but stay tuned to Consider This. Hello, you're watching Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. With me is Sherrod Kutin. Dr. Bridget Welsh joins us now. She is with the Asia Research Institute at University of Nottingham, Malaysia. Bridget, welcome to the show. Prime Minister Ismail Sabri Yaakob's cabinet is going to be revealed tomorrow at 11 a.m., finally, swearing in on Monday. Now, for some, it's taken far too long for this announcement, and whereas for others, it's surprisingly quick, considering the complexities of the relationships between political parties and coalitions. Now, I'm just wondering, Bridget, what about you? Are you surprised that the cabinet lineup will be announced tomorrow, just a week after Ismail Sabri's swearing in?
No, not at all. I think that, you know, you're still dealing with the major coalition actors that were part of the PN government. So they know each other and they're able to sort of come together in terms of some sort of cooperation arrangement. And of course, the fact that it took a week as opposed to a few days indicates that there is intensive conversations that are happening that are different than the previous one.
Bridget, I believe the Prime Minister Ismail Sabri has no end of advice from all sectors, with their wish list, with what they think his government ought to be. Saleh Said Khua recently talked about a 15-member cabinet with a very short term leading into a general election. And more recently, a veteran UMNO leader, Mohamed Yusof Latif, said that it was no point for him to induct Bersatu members into cabinet because they would be foes or rivals come election. How do you see this? I mean, how do you see him having to decide on who is going to have to lead?
Well, I think, first of all, the indication of this conversation that we've had in public by former politicians and many people in parts of society is an indication of more democratic space that people are carving out. To have these types of conversations about who should be in the cabinet, what type of cabinet should there be, I think really is an indication of the vibrancy in the context of Malaysian political life. I think also it is also a recognition of what is happening politically on the ground. I mean, today 400 people died. This is a serious situation. And I think that it is calling for a self-reflection and also a kind of a fundamental shift away from politics that's based on accommodation of personal interests to those that is focused on public service and the needs of the people. And I think this is these comments, which have come from many different quarters, I think many of them have been very well-meaning. Now, some aspects of that you've just mentioned, however, reflect the ongoing issues of instability that this government will face. And I think it's useful for us to talk a little bit about what those are, because it is no question that the choice and the accommodation of the cabinet is Ismail Sabri's first major political test. And you have three very pivotal relationships that have to be negotiated very carefully. One is UMNO itself, his relationship with the court cluster, with the existing leadership of UMNO, the issues of contenders of power. How does he place potential challengers that if he himself takes a leadership position within UMNO? The second, of course, which you've alluded to just now, is the Bersatu relationship. The Bersatu relationship is a really particularly thorny one because there are different factions within that party. And, of course, also many of them are very lightning rod figures that has been mentioned earlier by Kian Ming. I think that it's not just about rivalry. It's also about public perceptions of these particular actors that were prominent in the previous administration. And third, of course, is GPS. This government would not have the numbers that it does without it bringing in the role for Sarawak. And, of course, there's a lot of debate over whether or not there'll be a DPM, what type of ministries and roles that people would have. But all of these relationships need to be accommodated, and they need to be navigated, because the relationship is not just vis-a-vis Ismail Sabri and these groups, but within the coalition itself. And one of the biggest challenges ahead is finding a cabinet that is actually can work together, because one of the lessons of the PN government was that there was too much talking past each other, and that the communication strategy was not one based on cooperation. The crisis management will need a cohesive, cooperative cabinet that can work together, that is competent and has enough inclusion that can actually get the respect in order and the traction and legitimacy to be able to solve the crisis that Malaysia is facing.
Okay, on that note about cooperation, if I can look past the cabinet for a little bit and look at that meeting that Ismail Sabri had with Pakatan Harapan leaders yesterday, he was talking about working constructively with the opposition. Do you think that is a sign, it's a realistic approach, that this is the start of bipartisan cooperation?
Look, I think that Ismail Sabri was the leader of the opposition during Pakatan Harapan government. He knows many of the players himself. In this context, the outreach, I think, gives a political space to not focus immediately on politicking and giving positions in the first part of his tenure. I think it also suggests that there is a kind of one willingness and a recognition that politicking on all sides has not necessarily benefited the opposition as well, so we saw them coming to the table. I think it is important to recognize that they've staked out a role in the current political environment, one that is bringing stability, but also one that is actually making sure they're part of the keluarga, they're part of the family, which, of course, it means that they will be listened to in terms of some of the discussion. And I think that is an important dimension of what has happened. But I also recognize that a lot of this is very much theater, and there's not necessarily the substance of the relationship in terms of what is going to be asked for, in terms of reforms, what has been expected. The opposition has given itself considerable outs in the statement that it has as well. But I think for the short term, there has been a reduction of the temperature. Ismail Sabri has given political space to deal with some of the challenges in terms of the difficult dimensions he has within his own coalition. And then there has been a kind of recalibration somewhat to focus on the interests of and the needs of the people. However, none of the political actors have meaningful policy platforms and new suggestions to kind of address the kind of the situation on the ground. And that, I think, is something that is very important moving forward. What are the new approaches going to be? How are the problems that people are facing in the economy and the health and with their families of losing loved ones, how are those going to be fundamentally addressed in a different way?
Bridget, I like your point about, you know, the democratic nature of Malaysia. It's evolving. It's become more vibrant. How much can Ismail Sabri ignore popular sentiment around those, as it were, problematic individuals in the Perikatan National Government? To what extent can he have another bloated cabinet, not only that doesn't function, but that saddles the Malaysian taxpayer with, you know, with pensions amounting to hundreds of thousands of dollars for eternity, or at least until they no longer exist? How can he continue to accommodate in the same ways that previous governments have had to accommodate?
Ismail Sabri comes into power at the weakest prime minister from a perspective of also the most difficult environment. There's limits on finances. There's a very serious health and economic situation. And COVID-19 doesn't look like it's leaving Malaysia anytime soon, globally also, but also from the perspective of the seriousness. So in this context, I think that, you know, one of the lessons that needs to be taken by Ismail Sabri's leadership is the lessons of the failures of the PN government, which, and one of those failures was not listening enough to the to what the concerns on the ground for ordinary people. You know, yes, they threw a few packages of social relief, but those were not sustainable, and the economic management was not one that was cohesive. And I think, you know, in this context, in order to get a cabinet that is seen to work together, it has to be one that is connected to the concerns of the ordinary people. I believe that, you know, it wasn't just an elite crisis that resulted in Muhyiddin Yassin leaving power. It was a public pressure that was pivotal in that regard. And I think, you know, Ismail Sabri, in this particular point, he has a very small, short honeymoon to be able to try to get more public confidence, which could erode very quickly if he doesn't actually address this. So, yes, it needs a smaller cabinet. It needs a cabinet that is seen to be full of competent people, people on the key positions. And he will get goodwill, even from those. That goodwill may not come with overwhelming support, but it may come with a certain degree of kind of giving him political space to have traction. People expect deliverables now in a more meaningful way. And otherwise, if it's more of the same, we're going to see a kind of even stronger reaction against this government.
Right, Bridget, thank you. Always a pleasure having you on the show. That was Dr. Bridget Welsh of the Asia Research Institute. We're going to take another quick break. Stay tuned to Consider This. Hello, thank you so much for staying with Shraddha and I on Consider This. Joining us now is Aira Azhari. She's the manager of the Democracy and Governance Unit at the think tank Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs, better known as IDEAS. Aira, good evening. Thank you for being on the show tonight. Now, I'm wondering what you would like or how you would like to see this incoming cabinet improve on issues of governance and avoid some of the failures that we've seen from the previous administration. Particularly, I'm wondering if this is possible, given that we're expecting to see a lot of the same faces in cabinet.
So I do echo what the two previous panelists have mentioned of extremely low trust, I think, amongst Malaysians towards politicians at the moment, and who can blame them, right? So Malaysians' patience are running really low. So I would say my first priority is actually for this new cabinet or this new government to just have a no-frills approach, just focus on what is important, even with the cabinet appointments. I would even suggest that to prioritize the key appointments first, Ministry of Finance, Health, MITI, Education, and even MOSTI, because they seem to still be in charge of the vaccination process. So I would say, please just focus on the key ministries first and get the right people appointed there. And then, you know, if there is a need to expand it and appoint more people in other key ministries, then maybe we can do that later. So I think this is really important to prioritize that first. And I'm not saying that Ismail Sabri is going to have an easy time picking these ministers, considering that, you know, his majority is also not huge, right? It's only 114. And there is a need to please many people, of course. But I would say, if he just focuses, prioritizes, and have a no-frills approach, I do think it is possible to sort of weather the storm, at least for the next few months, hopefully. Yeah.
Ira, do you think, you know, Malaysia's come to a point when what ought to be and what is good for the nation seems to part ways with what will turn out to be the case, considering the political culture that we have, the political party structures that we have, and where governments are put together? I mean, how realistic is this wish of yours, as much as it might be shared by much of the population, that we have a small, nimble, and competent cabinet, as opposed to one that pleases all the you know, key cornerstone supporters for the government so that it can stay in power?
I do think there is a difference slightly, in the sense that Ismail Sabri should, and I really hope, has learned from the short tenure of the previous Prime Minister to at least keep that in mind in all the steps that he's going to take next, right? So, you know, this Prime Minister, I think, has an probably even more of an uphill battle than the previous one. So, of course, the party consideration, the political considerations will always be there. I'm not denying that. But I do think that the gesture that he showed, was it yesterday, by calling the opposition leaders, at least, you know, even if that's optics, I think at least that has portrayed an image of being a bit more open to collaboration and to listening. So I do think there is some ray of hope there.
Ira, you know, this incoming government at most will have 21, 22 months in Putrajaya until the next general elections. And I'm just wondering what that would mean for this government in terms of policy making, right? In terms of meaningful reforms. This is a very short tenured government till elections are due. Are there things that they can do, or do you see paralysis when it comes to policy and reforms?
I do think there are things they can do. And I think it is a mistake for any politician to come into office and just to think of the next election cycle. So there needs to be more long-term thinking. And when you think about it, the 12th Malaysia Plan is actually meant to be tabled later this year. And also, of course, the next budget, right? So, you know, whether they like it or not, that kind of long-term thinking is required of this government, and it is absolutely crucial to do that and not to just have the next election in mind. So I do think that is absolutely crucial, and you know, any short-term thinking will not get Malaysia out of the crisis, multiple crises that we are facing at the moment. Yeah.
Ira, you know, much of what we hope pivots on the competence, the talents, the far-sightedness of political leaders. Is it too much to expect to shift the balance of responsibility onto other social actors so that we're not, as it were, held to ransom by bad politics? That in, say, for instance, the issue of health management, we know the pandemic's development is in part because of decades of underinvestment in healthcare, and we're reaping the rewards of that neglect. How do we reset Malaysia that doesn't depend solely on political actors from the party political system?
This is an interesting question, and I think this leads back to what voters expect their politicians to do for them, right? Because I think the political culture that we have at the moment, of course, there is elite infighting amongst politicians, but I also think decades of the political culture that we have seen for decades in Malaysia is where, you know, Malaysians themselves rely, you know, a lot on our MPs and our ADUNs to do a lot of the task that, you know, perhaps is not their main duty. And I'm not blaming Malaysians per se, but that is a symptom of the political system that we have, you know, undergone for so long. And I think a lot of this needs to change. And how does this change? I mean, local councils need to be empowered. You know, we probably need local council elections so that some of those duties of politicians can then be decentralized and brought down to the level of local council leaders to do a lot of the things that we expect our MPs and our ADUNs to do. And a lot of this entails you know, huge changes, institutional reforms across the board. And, you know, it also entails changes in our parliamentary structure. You know, we need to have more days where that parliament sits, because right now parliament doesn't sit for very long. And we need to add parliamentary select committees as well. So I do think that the voter-politician relationship in itself probably needs to change. Yeah.
Right. Well observed. Ira, thank you so much for being on the show. That was Ira Azhari from the Think Tank Ideas, wrapping up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris.
Mansharad Kutan, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching. Good night.